What up, people? It's your boy John Middlecoff. What's going on? Back at it another week. That little buffer week we have, also known as Pro Bowl week, between the Super Bowl, also known Senior Bowl to the scouting community and to the Raiders and the Niners who are coaching that game, and we'll get into that game a little later. The Chiefs, I think, just actually right as I'm recording this, officially hired Steve Spagnuolo as the defensive coordinator. There was an interesting story that I have some thoughts on, how the football guys in the league, you know, meaning the scouting community, like the football guy scouts, are just displeased with the analytics and those kind of the new age personnel people in the NFL. You know, I've had some experience on that working in Philadelphia, and I definitely have some thoughts. Derek Carr arguing back and forth with Stephen A. Smith, couple nuggets there, but I got to start with one thing. And I've said this before on this podcast, and I think we all learn differently. No different than, you know, in school, football's the same way. Some people learn in a meeting room. Some people learn on the field. Some people can study, you know, through, PowerPoints in classrooms. Other people need to, you know, actually do out their homework. I don't know. Everyone just learns differently. I don't learn very well. I'm just not that smart of a human. Somehow I got a couple degrees, but probably more luck than it was natural ability. But I went to school at Cal Poly, and it's for football fans, Ramses Barden drafted once upon a time, third round. Chris Gokong, third rounder. We're not, you know, not a football factory, 1AA, blue-collar program. You know, about 30,000 people go there. It's a state school in California. It's basically smack dab in the middle along the coastline between the Bay Area and Los Angeles. And for the most part, people that went to the school were split. A lot of Southern California people, a lot of Northern California people. But the motto of the school, which just kind of fit me perfectly, was learn by doing. And it's kind of a motto. I mean, it's cheesy or whatever, but it really kind of works for me. The more I do something, the better I get out of it. And I do think that it works for most people. You learn by doing something. You don't learn through someone telling you. You have to actually do it. Like, the more I've done this podcast, the more ability I have to just be more efficient doing it, know what you guys want, just make it sound better, whatever, pick the right topics. But I also was more equipped to do that because I had worked in radio for a while. If I had never worked in radio and just attempted to do this right out of the NFL, I probably would not be very good. And I'm not saying I'm great now, but I got a pretty good idea what I'm doing and what I'm not doing. Well, I've learned that through doing it. And I think when you look at the Super Bowl, you know, you have one team that, let's call it what it is, treats the Super Bowl like you and I do dinner. It's just part of their life. You know, the Patriots, what, this is the 9th Super Bowl for Belichick and Brady? Say that out loud. The 9th Super Bowl. And it feels like they've been in every Super Bowl the last like 10 years. They've definitely been in it like 3 or 4 times just in the last, obviously Denver and Carolina went to the one, but before that, what have they been, 4 and 5 years? Like, they go all the time. So to me, obviously teams change in football because of the turnover with players, but their core group, obviously just beside Belichick and Brady, Gronkowski, Edelman, hell, Hogan played in one last year. A lot of their defensive or offensive linemen, Hightower, the better McCourty, and now his brother's on the team. Gilmore, who came from a bad team, played for the Patriots last year and was in the Super Bowl. Obviously, the entire coaching staff, because a lot of these guys, I know Patricia's gone, but Brian Flores, who's actually about to be gone, has been on the staff forever. Like, they've all been through this. The game planning, the way the week goes. Like, most people, just like most football players, are creatures of habit. You get in a very consistent routine. Even the playoffs has a pretty consistent routine. Once you have that bye, which is a little unique, though you have a bye during the season, you immediately get back in the rotation of you play Sunday, then you play the following Sunday, and then you play back-to-back games like a normal week, right? Well, then the Super Bowl goes back to a bye week. The difference is then you travel to this neutral site. You're not at home. You're not on the road. I mean, you are on the road, but it's not a typical road game because the other team you're playing is also on the road. Well, all these guys know how to operate. They know, you know, when to tell their wives to do this in terms of how many tickets they can give out. Like, everything is just kind of natural to the majority of guys on the Patriots, obviously including the coaching staff and the most important player, the quarterback. But Gronkowski, you name it, they're just used to this. Like, the advantage they have, and they're always peaking at this time anyway, but, like, think how hard it's going to be for the Rams. Jared Goff had never played in a big game before in his life before he got to the pros. And now he's playing in the Super Bowl? He went from playing, like, they barely got into one bowl game in his collegiate career to 3 years later, he's a starting quarterback of a Super Bowl team. Sean McVay, like, 6 years ago, was a tight end coach. Now he's a head coach. Now he's a great coach. But think of the jump. Now, he's clearly really smart, and he's clearly on top of it, and they are going to benefit from two guys that stand, obviously Wade Phillips, who just helps him out a lot and is a sounding board for him, former head coach, and been through the ringer, was just in a Super Bowl, what, 3 years ago when Denver came right down the street from me, and they played at Levi's Stadium and beat the Carolina Panthers. And obviously, Tlaib was on that team as well. So they got a feel for it, but for the most part, Gurley, you know, no. Think about, like, Whitworth. I think just won his first playoff game of his long, illustrious career this season. So the advantage the Patriots have of probably just being a better team, like if you just look at them on paper, assuming Gurley is not 100%, which I think it's safe to assume he's not, you go, the Patriots should be, and I think it's already up to 3 points. Neutral field, probably like a 4 or 5 point favorite. But then when you factor in how crazy Super Bowl week is, you're gone for a week, you do all this media obligations, it's just crazy. You know, it's just a wild week. That, think about, like, my first year in college, when you don't have your parents to yell at you, like, you gotta do your homework, you gotta wake up for school. You're like, I don't wanna go to class today. You kinda just can do whatever you want. And my first year at Cal Poly, I got the worst grades I've ever got. Like, sneaky, I don't know if my parents knew this. Like, I don't know if I was gonna last long. But then you get a hang of everything, and then it gets easy. Like, you know how to procrastinate, you know how not to procrastinate. Well, if you're on the Rams, like, do you really know, like, I can study a little bit next week. And then you realize you're in Atlanta, you're like, I want to go party, or I want to go screw around with my brother. You know, well, Brady and Gronk and all those guys know the schedule like the back of their hand, because they always are in this game. Now, the venue may change, the city may change, but the schedule, for the most part, doesn't change. The preparation, like, this is not just some normal bye week. Because in a normal bye week, you can study the week of the game. Well, during next week, it's going to be a little difficult just because of all the things you have to do. Well, Brady and all those guys know exactly what they have to have done by the time they get to the Super Bowl, you know, site. Because once they get there, they know exactly kind of like what takes away, how much time you got to spend with your family, to exactly what practice is like. Because it's different than any other normal week. The advantage the Patriots have, like, I keep wrapping my head around this game, and we'll get to it a lot next week. I just don't see how the Patriots lose. Because the advantage they have in this game from every aspect, the experience, which, again, I think really matters in this game. I don't know, Belichick will tell you, who cares? I do think it matters. Because I saw it a couple years ago when I lived it. When the game was at Levi's all that week, being on Radio Row, seeing the Carolina Panthers, they were just kind of happy to be there. They were just excited and screwing around. Where the Denver Broncos were kind of pissed off, because just 2 years ago they had been there. They had got their ass kicked by Seattle. They had a huge chip on their shoulder. Obviously, it was clear Peyton was probably going to be Peyton's last game. Had a lot to play for. And then they came out and they just kicked their ass. This one feels a little bit like that. Like, are the Rams just going to be happy to be there? And I wouldn't blame them. I didn't blame Carolina. Like, you should be happy to be there. It's a big deal just to get to the Super Bowl for 95% of teams. Like, this was the baseline of success. Like, the threshold to even begin to have a successful season, if you work, coach, or play for New England, is just make it to this game. Obviously, the goal is to win it. But anything, like, this game is just the standard. Like, this is what they expect. No other team expects this. Most teams celebrate just making the playoffs. Like, that's a big deal. There is one championship or bust team. There's actually two in this country, and that's the Warriors, and that is, you could argue, Alabama too, or maybe even Clemson now, and the Patriots. So it's a college team, one NBA team, and the Patriots, where it shouldn't be like that in football, but it is because of the standard in which they raised it. So I just think the experience, the learn by doing, just their ability to look back on things that worked, on things that did not work, and just be comfortable with the craziness of next week is something that is just invaluable, and I think is just going to be a big variable and a large variable in why the Patriots end up winning this game. I think easily one of the biggest non-head coaching changes happened this week, and that was Andy Reid fired Bob Sutton, who had been, I think a lot of us forget, it just shows you society we live in. Like, I say this all the time, like, people complaining, like, about, like, I complain a lot about the San Francisco Giants, because they tick me off. They should operate like the Yankees. Like, every, even a couple down years, they should go all back in and try to be winning championships. And people are like, 2010, they won a championship in 10, 12, and 14. 2010 was almost 10 years ago. Like, in the pace in which society operates, that feels like 20 years ago. So you can't really live in the past. But in all that being said, this was kind of starting off as somewhat of a defense of Bob Sutton. People forget when Andy first got there and Sutton was defensive coordinator, the unit was really good. Tomba, Houston, remember they had Don Terry Poe. Derek Johnson was still really good. Eric Berry, before he got sick. Like, they were one of the best defensive teams in the NFL. Like, Alex was not that good. I mean, he was okay, but those first couple years, they were a defensive-oriented team. And their defense was legit. I remember going to a game, it would have been 2014, so maybe Andy's second year in Kansas City, and they were playing Jim Harbaugh's last year for the 49ers at Levi Stadium. And it was a defensive bloodbath. And I think the 49ers ended up winning, but it was Alex threw a late touchdown. But it was just a physical, like, they were kind of like two equals of a team. And I think everyone's, oh, their defense has been shitty forever. No, actually, it's been pretty good. And it's been bad lately. And I think the change was needed. But I do think it's just the kind of world we live in. People forget when it's just a what have you done for me lately, just society in general. And maybe you could argue it's always been like that. But I'd say with social media and the pace in which we do everything, we forget things faster than we ever have. Like, what you did 5 years ago has never meant less, ever, especially in football. But I do think Andy was justified for firing this guy. He'd been there 6 years. They were only getting worse. And I don't think he was judging them as much on, you know, statistically where they were ranked. It was just you watch them, and they consistently blew coverages. Guys looked like they had nowhere to go. You had to make a change. Because in this day and age, you have to be able to match up in coverage, at least have a chance of knowing what's going on. And that Patriot game was a clinic. Like, you guys have no clue what's coming. The irony is they run the same thing, it feels like, most games. Like, hey, guys, when James White's in the game, they might run a wheel route to him. You know, that might happen. You know, when Gronkowski, I mean, and then when Romo starts calling out the plays, you know, it's like, God, did they even practice this? And it's the one thing with Andy Reid, elite offensive coach. And he has consistently been a great offensive coach. To me, this is the best quarterback, I would say most complete quarterback he's ever had as a head coach in the NFL. And don't forget, again, it's a long, long time ago, Donovan McNabb was a pretty damn good player. Patrick Mahomes can become a much better player than Donovan McNabb. So, like, you're going to be able to win big with his offense. That's clear. They played like crap in the first half, and they still put 31 points on the board. When you combine Andy's play calling and Patrick Mahomes' talent, ability, and upside, sky's the freaking limit. The sky is the freaking limit. But he is dependent on a good defensive coordinator. And when he had his most success in Philadelphia, he had Jim Johnson, who you could argue is like a Hall of Fame-level defensive coordinator. You know, I know they run a different defense, a 4-3 defense, but he was kind of the Vic Fangio of his time, like the best DC in the league. Now, he was different, more aggressive, 4-3, and it's what I would imagine, I haven't read any quotes, that Kansas City is going to run. And as a friend texted me in the NFL, and I do believe this now, it's just easier to run a 4-3 nowadays than a 3-4 because it's hard to find the 3-4 nose tackle. It's more difficult to find the linebackers. With 4-3, it's just easier to find the personnel. And I do think that Kansas City will benefit from this. And bottom line, Coach Reid's going to win a Super Bowl or not depending on his offense. They're always going to be able to score points. as long as Mahomes is healthy, and let's call it what it is, that's the only thing that matters, it's going to be, can they get stops? Like, they don't have to have the number one defense. They're not going to need to be Seattle or San Francisco several years ago. You just need to have come through in clutch situations. If they can ever just be a good situational defense in these next several years, the Chiefs can win it. And now it's on Steve Spagnuolo. That wasn't very good the last time he was a defensive coordinator. But Coach Reed knows him. They have a good working relationship. He has seen the mountaintop, right? He was a coordinator on a team that won a championship and played a huge reason that they got over the hump against the Patriots. To me, getting and inspiring pass rushers will never be the issue for coaches. It's about, can you scheme up and understand and coach coverages? Like, that is the differentiating factor. You listening or me sitting here, like, we could probably coach Khalil Mack or Aaron Donald. Because the position, I'm not saying we could be an NFL coach, but we'd have a chance. I'll tell you what we could not do. We 1,000% could not coach coverages. We 1,000% could not match up against certain offensive schemes. We'd have no clue. It is the hardest and most difficult part of a difficult job in general. Like, you can build a podcast. Like, I can just talk into a mic. I can download the software. But can you build the software, right? Can you build the software that can isolate where my listeners are coming from? How old they are? Like, that's the hard part. Can you decipher what Josh McDaniels is going to call? What whoever the offensive coordinator now is of Pittsburgh is going to call, right? That's going to make or break this team. I think Andy knew it. I think he made the right decision. And I don't know if this is going to work. I mean, he hasn't been in the league. It hasn't been great. But you had to make a change, and this was probably the best available candidate. Well, there was an interesting topic. I actually saw the headline. I go to RotoWorld. It's basically like Twitter before Twitter existed, and you use it a lot in the NFL. It's a fantasy website, but the way it sets it up, you use it in the NFL to keep track of injuries, you know, especially like when you're a personnel, when you're starting off as an intern or the lowest guy in the totem pole, you know, you kind of manually enter injuries into your system. So I go there just naturally every day. It kind of aggregates, you know, in a way, because I don't want to go to, I don't go to Pro Football Talk. I go to RotoWorld, and it does the same basically, but it's much easier. It's kind of like Twitter on a website. And there was an interesting headline yesterday. I'm recording this on Thursday, so this would have been Wednesday. That kind of grabbed my attention. It said, according to NFL draft insider Tony Pauline, I'm not sure who that is, but some general managers and scouting departments are starting to detest analytics as a means of decision makings and evaluations. I thought this was fascinating, and it's been a point of contention. You know, for years in pro sports, especially the last, 10, 15 years, as the rise of Billy Beane and Daryl Morey, it's definitely overtaken all of baseball, which, let's call it what it is basically a game of individual matchups, and you can judge the game pretty easily like a stock market. Like, it is a very number-centric game. Basketball, somewhat in the middle, very numbers driven now with the three-point shot, with foul shots and percentages. But I think it's fair to say that the game, there is, to me, an element of things that aren't quantifiable. In football, it's hard, right? I do think that we struggle to separate, like, football has been using analytics forever. What do you think the 40-yard dash is? What do you think height, weight, and speed is? What do you think, you know, he had 80 catches on the season. But I also think that the new generation of analytic, I guess, personnel people, and I worked for a guy that is considered one in Howie Roseman, and I think what really separated Howie, and the thing that I always respect about him, is how hard he worked at evaluating players. Like, he always watched the tape. He was always calling coaches or people to find out information on a player, things that you can't quantify, to then also balance with the numbers. I also think that it is human nature in any industry, when things start to change, people get uncomfortable, right? If you have a job, you're not always into change, because that may mean your job may no longer be there. just basic like human survival, right? You just test that person because you start thinking this guy might wipe me out. You know, it'd be the equivalent of like Amazon. You know, they charge and they get all these tax breaks and they build these warehouses all over the place because they say they're going to employ all these people, but they really are employing way less people than they possibly could because they use so many robots. And I obviously it's different than football scouting, but I think that football scouts are just kind of nervous all over the country that eventually they'll slowly just kind of be pushed out and they'll be irrelevant. And I'd argue with anyone, you just have to adapt for the job. Like, clearly they value analytics and these owners a lot more than they ever have. In the sense that they want you to dive deeper. Like, okay, the guy, yeah, he breaks a bunch of tackles. If you just say that, do you have any evidence? Now, the football scouts have always, you know, made clips of a guy. Well, now you can also back it. I'm sure they have this in-depth data that you can go, you know, he broke 20% of initial contact. Just stuff like that. It's not really that complicated. There's only so far you can go, you know, with this stuff. But at the end of the day, baseball's on the opposite. Your personality means nothing. There is no such thing as chemistry in baseball. You either get guys out or get hits or you don't. In football, who you are as a person, the unquantifiable stuff, like how tough you are, how much heart you are, have, what your work ethic is so important because lifting and practicing and just working on your craft, you practice, the ratio is like 5-1, you know, on a given week. Where in baseball, you play every day, in basketball, you play 3 or 4 times a week. So like evaluating people is still always going to be the most important job of any front office. Now, why wouldn't you use the numbers with the tape to try to balance it out and make the best decisions? But I do understand on the most basic level where if you are a 60-year-old football scout, you start thinking like, am I just going to get blown out? Am I not going to have, are they just going to, basically destroy and evaporate, you know, my position? Is it just no longer going to cease to exist? And I think it's understandable for these guys to think like that. But I also think like that's part of when you don't own a company, as times change and as systems change and as information change, you better change with it or you can easily, in this environment where technology gets more important, right? Every year, every 6 months, it just becomes more in the forefront of being able to use it, right? Like 10 years ago, a lot of people didn't email. Can you imagine saying you don't email anymore? Imagine saying that, or you don't text. Like I'm just relating this to scouts that like in 2019, I do so much of my business and the commerce that comes my way or that I generate other people off emails and texts. I don't call that much anymore. I don't need to. Now, I'm not saying that's a great thing. Sometimes you like to have a personal relationship with people, but you don't necessarily have to have it anymore. If you can just, you know, back up how many downloads I get, if I'm selling a podcast or selling Periscope show on Twitter. Well, you know, in 2019, these scouts, you do have to think outside the box. And anyone that's seen Moneyball knows the way he talked to his scouts. I do think you can look at it and say, well, you don't need to be Billy Bean here, but you do have to bring something else to the table than just saying he's fast, he can jump. Like, yeah, we've heard that a bunch of times and we've missed a lot of times on that. Can you back it up? And I think that's where we're headed. I don't think there's just going to be some mass wipeout of scouts, but I do think the more dynamic scouts, the people that understand how to mesh the numbers, and again, they've always used numbers, but the more in-depth numbers with the tape and our great judges of people are always going to last. They're always going to have jobs. And I also understand why there is some detesting, right? Why there is some anger from one side. It's natural. When I start forcing you to change, humans don't like change. We don't like to be scared that whatever we're doing in life might not have value. And that's what I think a lot of guys are thinking. Well, the smart ones, and there are a lot of smart ones, I know a lot of them, especially a lot of young ones, you got to just slowly adapt and you'll be fine. If you're good at anything in life, the cream always rises to the top. And I think these two sides will continue to mesh, and it's it's a little bit of a blown out of proportion deal right now.
Okay, let's dive into the Senior Bowl. The two teams coaching this game happen to be in my backyard, Gruden, Shanahan. And, you know, it's arguably the most important draft in Raider history. I mean, the reason you got here, you're drafting the top five, is because you suck. And you traded one of the great defensive players in recent memory, Khalil Mack. And you traded one of the better players you've had in the last 10 years in Amari Cooper. So you have to, that's three picks in the top 27. And obviously the Niners have the second overall pick. Well, when you draft second, that also means you draft really high in the second round. I think the pick is 36. Because the Raiders, Niners, and Jets all have the same record, it kind of rotates after the first round. So the Niners draft second, and then it kind of flips. I think the Jets draft second in the second round. The Raiders draft third, and the Niners draft fourth. But there is no disputing. This game, I was just doing a little research on the Senior Bowl website because I knew it was a lot. And obviously a lot of top quarterbacks. So this game has become a lot more sexy the last 4 or 5 years. Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Carson Wentz, you know, Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo. A lot of quarterbacks over the last, you know, probably half decade have played in this game. And the quarterbacks in this game, Drew Locke, Daniel Jones, the kid from Duke, is a guy that I've heard a lot of good things about. And someone like, you can't, if you're Gruden, he comes from the Ron Wolf school of thought, like for the 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to come back off the ACL, and it's clear Nick Mullins is going to be the backup quarterback. Good find as an undrafted free agent. But when it comes to the Raiders, like, they got Nathan Peterman and A.J. McCarron. They got to find a backup. And he comes from the Ron Wolf school of thought, Andy Reid, Holmgren, all those guys. Reggie McKenzie did it a couple years ago with Connor Cook. He drafted Connor Cook even though they had just maxed out Derek Carr. You always look, you know, to add quarterbacks. And I really think the Raiders are going to be in position after coaching this game. You know Gruden's affinity for quarterbacks. I will be shocked if he doesn't draft a guy, you know, probably between round 3 and 5. Whether it's Trace McSorley, whether it's, you know, Gardner Minshew, he's going to like one of these guys. One of these guys from this game is going to be on their team. Now, I think the last 2 years, it's averaged about 33% of the draft has come from this game. I saw John Lynch today on with NFL Network. He's like, Fred Warner, he was one of their better rookies this year. Came from the Senior Bowl. Now, obviously, they had scouted him during the year, but they loved him during the Senior Bowl. Both these two teams, like the hardest part of scouting, like anyone could tell you Rashawn Gary's sweet, right? Anyone can tell you N'Keal Harry is really good. Anyone can tell you guys are really good. And it's clear at this practice, you know, I don't know how many people are listening. You know, you guys probably are at work, so you're not able to watch the practice. Like, there are certain guys, Deebo Samuels from South Carolina is just dominating at wide receiver. This guy I didn't even know that much about, and he's right down the street from my house where I grew up. Keelan Doss, a wide receiver from UC Davis, is kicking ass. I mean, there are going to be so many guys from this game. You know, obviously once the underclassmen come out, they usually litter the first round. But this game usually gets 4 to 6 players in the first round, but then it just litters the second, third, and fourth rounds. So these two teams, like the hardest part of evaluating talent is not whether a guy can run, not whether a guy can catch, not whether a guy can pass rush. It's how does he tick? Like, how does he respond in a meeting? So when you yell at a guy on the field and then you go correct it in the meeting room and then you go back to the field, does the guy get it? Does he understand that? And these two teams get a front row seat. They get to do it, you know? And I'd argue this is, it's not a make or break year for Lynch or Shanahan, but they need a big year. I mean, they drafted now in the top 10 2 years in a row. Obviously this year, number 2 overall. Now you got to put it in context. Jimmy Garoppolo was hurt. But next year with Jimmy back and you're paying him $25 million, time to win. Gruden, you trade all these players. Like, you better nail this draft. Well, you can't ask for a better opportunity. And I know Gruden has like, him and Mayock have like a male erection at this game. I mean, there are not two guys, I promise you. The one I do appreciate about this, about both of them. And I think John Lynch really likes it. Would Kyle rather not be doing it? Yeah, I've heard yes. And I don't totally blame him. But Gruden is like a kid in a candy store. So it is fun, having just watched the practice, how much joy he's getting on the field. And we all know that Mayock, I mean, freaking lives for the Senior Bowl and the Combine. Like, you could just rename that Mike Mayock. So I think both these two teams, their scouts are going into meetings. Like, for those that don't realize, like, at the Senior Bowl, two of the 32 teams coach the Senior Bowl. So those coaches get those players in actual install meetings. Now, at night, there's like kind of a huge ballroom slash convention center where all the scouts can come and you interview and guys can sit down with head coaches, you know, Mike Tomlin. And I mean, all the coaches or GMs are present, so they're interviewing these guys one-on-one or as a group. So it's not like they necessarily have a lot more inside access, but there is an inside access where tomorrow's Friday. Well, if you're listening to this, it's probably Friday or Saturday. All the NFL personnel people bone out of town Thursday night or Friday morning. So the Niners and Raiders get those guys for like an extra 32, 40 plus hours, just one-on-one with them. And I think I saw Drew Locke was saying that he sat down at breakfast and Gruden started drilling him about passes, you know, that he screwed up during the season against Alabama. And then you're getting to have this conversation with this guy over breakfast that is just a unique situation. And it's really more powerful for the teams than it is for the players. And I've always said for the players, there's been like two major injuries in the last, you know, 10 years there. You go to make money. It's hard to lose money there, especially as a quarterback. If you have a good arm, you should go if invited. And if you're fast and you're a wide receiver, you 100% go because fast always jumps off the field. And good pass rushers. My last year in the NFL, Ziggy Ansah was like this raw product. It was clear he was like 6'5", 260, whatever, could run like the deer. But he wasn't like, you watch him at BYU, and it's like, he doesn't know what he's doing. Well, of course he doesn't know what he was doing. He had moved from Africa like 3.5 years before. I think the coaching staff found him like on campus. Oh, he was playing pickup hoops. And one of the dudes was like, bro, you should come out for the team. And they introduced him to Bronco Mendenhall. So yeah, he was really raw. And then he went to the Senior Bowl practice and wasn't even that good. And I vividly remember Brett Veach, I think was on the Chiefs by then, text me like, bro, you got to watch the game tape. Because sometimes, you know, Saturday, like this Saturday, I'm going to play golf. I won't watch the game live. Scouts are out, their families, whatever. You might not watch the game live. But you go back and watch the tape. And Ziggy dominated the game. It was like a high school recruit that's going to Alabama. You're like, oh my God. And then what happened? The dude went fifth overall. And I think the guy Sweat right now from Mississippi State is doing that. And it's pretty clear that he's going to be a top 10 player. It's really probably, I was thinking about this today, it might be the most lucrative college job interview in America. I mean, it really, for seniors in college, in all of America. I mean, how many seniors get to go to a job convention? That's what this is. And basically interview for a job that's going to pay them anywhere from, you know, a $15 million bonus to at minimum $500,000 a year. Like, it's basketball, obviously you can make a lot too, but none of the top guys ever work out at the combine. And two, they only have two rounds. Where in football, you can eventually become a millionaire if you get drafted in the fourth round, right? You play three sweet years and then you get extended. So it's just an incredible opportunity for all these guys. And it is a fun game to watch. Like, I never understand this. And I think a lot of people that listen to me like college football. But sometimes pro people don't love college football. Well, if you love the NFL, why wouldn't you like watching? Now, specific college football games when you go, well, they got three first rounders. Like, how would you not be interested? It's like the minor leagues. It's where the guys come from. Now, I know a lot of people that aren't maybe not that into college football start getting into it now with these bowl or with the Senior Bowl and then the combine. And then we start getting a pretty good idea of who's going to go where, give or take. The marketplace kind of starts, you know, playing itself out. What pick will I have to use to get that guy? How many picks would I have to trade up to get him? Could I trade back from 5 to 15 and still get the guy I want? That's really kind of in full swing right now, and I think they're feeling it out. The other story that's kind of national and it's kind of local for me, and I've talked about it on my other podcast, on my Periscope show, so I can't even talk about it that much more. Derek Carr getting into it with a First Take guy. I've met Stephen A. a couple times. I like Stephen A. He's a TV entertainer. I don't go to him for opinions on anything but probably maybe a little bit of basketball. Max Kellerman, I've never heard him utter a word that I take seriously ever, so I don't care what he says. But I think Derek needs to get out of this. Like, clearly he's a little defensive right now, and airing your stuff on Twitter is a can't-win proposition.
but I think he needs to get out of the business. Like, we all know, especially people around the Bay Area, like, you're a high character guy. You work hard. You've played through broken backs. You came right back from eight. We get it. But, like, when you always say, I'm going to keep working hard, I'm going to, you know, part of being a pro is you're just expected to work hard. Like, anyone listening, if you have a big boy job and you make a lot of money, like, no one is, you know, checking the clock when you get to work. You're just expected to be there early and stay late. You know, anyone that makes a lot of money and owns a company, you just put in, you don't count hours. You just grind. Like, it's just part of the expectation. It's part of the standard. Like, Tom Brady is just working his ass off. You know, Peyton Manning forever, just grinding. Like, Russell Wilson grinds. Like, it's part of the deal with being a star quarterback making $25 million. Here's the other thing. Part of the reason you get all the money is because you get all the praise. Well, usually when someone gets all the praise, that also means when it doesn't go well, you get all the blame. It's usually why you get all the girls. It's why you get all the fame. It comes with being a quarterback. This is part of the deal with being a franchise quarterback. You get shit on sometimes. It sucks, you know, but you make an astronomical amount of money, and it's part of the reason. You are the face of the franchise with the good and the bad. You know, the quarterbacks in the NFL are basically like NBA superstars. They just mean more to the franchise. They are just more popular. They are more well-known. They probably get too much credit when it goes well, and they probably get too much blame when it goes shitty. But it's part of the deal. Sometimes you just got to suck it up, you know? But you can't, like, once you get to a certain age in life, you know, probably over, like, I don't know, 24, 25, you can't really brag about how hard you work. You know why? Because most people in this country that are successful work hard. Just as a wise man once told me, my partner Guy Haberman, that's the price of admission. You know, you're getting $25, $30 million. You're not only expected to work, you're expected to win games. It's a great part about pro sports. Like, you just need to not say anything, just come back and win games and play well. Because that's the only thing we care about in pro sports. We don't care. Like, I'll give you an example. No one in the Bay Area ever complains about how much Steph Curry makes. You know, he makes like 35. He's going to make like $40 million next year. You know why? He just wins MVPs and championships. That's all he does. He just kicks ass. You know who we do complain about around here? Jeff Samardzija for the Giants. Makes about $20 million. Can't get a guy out to save his life. You know? In pro sports, just get the job done. When you don't get the job done, like for example, Aaron Rodgers this year, they started losing. He started getting a lot of crap. Why? Because I think he literally made $80 million over 6 months. So it was like the money we, you know, just common, the average guy in this country kind of resents wealth. Now, we'll respect it if you're just kicking ass. There's nothing we can say. Like, you can talk crap about Jeff Bezos all you want. Like, we all use his product. Like, you can hate on Tom Brady all you want, but no one can dispute all the guy does is win, right? It is what it is. But when you're the star quarterback and things did not go well and you're drafting four overall, like, yeah, you're a good guy. You're a high character guy. You've played well at a high level, but you haven't played well lately. So just, there's no reason to clap back. You know, it's a never-ending cycle that you will not win as a player. It's why most quarterbacks don't say anything. And it's probably harder for Derek and even the guys younger than him because they've grown up on social media. I'll say this. Like, I really think millennials, you know, they take a lot of crap. They are a very, very friendly generation. Like, they're more friendly personally than, like, I'm the older end of millennials at 34. I'd say 34 to, like, early 40s. Much just meaner humans. Most people I know in their 20s are just very friendly. And I think it's hard for them sometimes just because they're so active and they see it all and they watch it all now. Not that they always didn't. But it's just, you can't keep fighting those battles because you will not win them. Okay, let's get in to this thing called the Middlecoff Mailbag. Slide up into my DMs, at John Middlecoff, and ask away. I actually just had a question. Again, at John Middlecoff on Instagram. Slide up into those DMs. I think I just deleted a question. It was basically, why does the media, I don't even know if the media, just us in general, people, when we talk about football, like Brady's playing Goff, Russell Wilson's playing, you know, Dak. Even though this isn't basketball, it's not like they're on the field at the same time. And I think the answer is pretty simple. Quarterbacks are just the most famous people. So that's just who we talk about. You know, if you have an all-pro guard, the casual fan's not going to be like, you know what, Anthony Munoz? You know, I mean, it's just not how they talk. I don't know why I dropped Anthony Munoz. I couldn't think of a sweet guard off the top of my head. You know, Zach Martin, whoever. But you just...
It's just not the way we talk, even though those guys get highly compensated. You know, quarterbacks are just, you know, like I was just talking about with Carr, are just the most important player. They get paid the most. They get talked about the most. They get the most praise. They get the most blame. They get it all, you know? It's just the deal. Longtime listener, could be wrong on a couple points here, but I believe Wade Phillips was the defensive coordinator for Kubiak on the Broncos team that won Super Bowl 50. True. And Vaughn was the MVP. They also beat the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. I think he was one of only a few times that Brady has ever seemed overwhelmed with an elite pass rush like Denver had. Do you think this will be the storyline on game day, Brady versus Phillips defense? Haven't heard anyone talk about Phillips' previous success against Brady. That's a good question. Let me give a little thumbs up emoji. I do think it's a little different in the sense that when Brady got his ass kicked in that AFC Championship game, and if you remember that, you know, I'm pretty sure Gronk wasn't 100% healthy, but their defensive line was, and I watched so much of them because they were, that was in like their heyday, and they were playing the Raiders twice a year. I just watched them a lot, and I'm sure probably a lot of people listening watched them a lot. They were one of the best teams in the league, so they were always on national television game. It wasn't just Vaughn. You know, it was Malik Jackson, it was Derek Wolfe, and he's a coach now, but DeMarcus Ware was still on the team. And then I think they had Shaquille Barrett coming off the bench. Shane Ray, I think, had just been a first-round pick, and he wasn't even that good. But their defensive line was just stupid. And that was a year, people forget this, Dante Scarnecchia, who actually went to college with my uncle, they've been good friends for like 50 years, had retired. And they had another offensive line coach, I think his name was like Guillermo, I can't even say his name. He was actually just the offensive line coach for the Colts, and they just fired him. But my point was that it was just kind of a weird year, and this is an all-time great defensive line. I mean, Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, Hall of Famer. Malik Jackson, turned out he was a max player. Derek Wolfe, before some injuries, was an elite player. DeMarcus Ware, Hall of Famer. So I think it's, and if you look back on the defenses that gave him trouble with New York, Justin Tuck, I've met Justin Tuck. He's like in his prime, 6'6", 270, can run like a deer. JPP, Kiwanuka, OC, back in 07, Strahan. I mean, they had dudes. When I look at this Rams defensive line, Aaron Donald, Hall of Famer. Sue, when he plays hard, is a mother. I give this guy credit, never been a huge fan, but Fowler Jr., who they traded for from Jacksonville, former top five pick, has looked a lot better. So their defensive line, I mean, Aaron Donald, I'd put Von Miller 3 or 4 years ago was elite. It's like Aaron Donald. You know, I wouldn't say Sue's quite as good as those other guys, but yeah, I mean, it could happen. I would say one thing, though. This Patriot team and just the coaching staff, because they've lost some of those games, there's not, you could argue, maybe like Walsh, and there are probably a couple like late 80s, Parcells, Belichick game plans. This is probably a top two or three game planning staff in the history of the NFL. That being the combination of Brady, Josh, and Bill. Like the combination of the three of them. Like they're just going to see things getting ready these 2 weeks that, you know, beside Parcells and probably Walsh wouldn't even notice. I'm being dead serious. I mean, it's probably the greatest think tank. Unlike, because it was just Walsh. I got news for you. Love the guy. He's a legend. Joe Montana's not the smartest guy. And Parcells really had Belichick, and he said in the 30 for 30 that he leaned on Bill. Like, Bill's Belichick, that is, probably the smartest football coach, just smartest football coach, besides being the best football coach of all time. Josh McDaniels, say what you want about him. He is an elite coordinator, an elite game planner. And Brady has just turned into, like, he's morphed into Peyton Manning. The crazy thing, in the early 2000s, like when I was in high school and then I went to college, probably like a lot of people, I love Peyton Manning. I thought he was a badass. And I always rooted for him against the Patriots. And then, like, eventually it kind of flipped and I kind of became a Brady guy. I still like Manning. But remember back in the day, people were like, oh, Tom's just winning because of the defense and the coaching staff. He can't carry the team. Well, like these last 10 years, he's been on a warpath of greatness, of just kicking ass, winning MVPs, and winning chips.
you know, and just going to the Super Bowl. He kind of became Peyton Manning with like a better arm, you know. It's just a genius think tank. So, yeah, I think it'll be a storyline. Aaron Donald's a monster, but man, they get rid of the ball so fast. And Dante Scarnecchia is back. And as I think Brady said on his WEEI show this week, he's the greatest offensive line coach in the history of the league. I'd agree. Middlecoff mailbag. You mentioned Sean Payton's bad play calling in your last episode. Does he get a bit of a free pass as a head coach? McCarthy just got killed for only winning one Super Bowl with Aaron. Payton has only won one with Breeze and missed the playoffs nearly half the time, 5 out of a 12 season. Is he a bit overrated? A guy I lean on in the league, an assistant coach, coordinator, has told me multiple times that he thinks Sean Payton's the best offensive mind in the league. Now, that could be argued. I think like Andy, they're very dependent on their defensive coordinator. So a lot of those seasons that he missed, their defense was historically bad. They always dominated on offense. I think this team, they made a little bit of a calculated risk. Like, remember, they traded up in that draft to get Marcus Davenport. And I was texting with a buddy in the league. I'm like, is Marcus Davenport good? Because they don't have a first-round pick this year. And he's like, yeah, he's pretty good. He's a little stiff, but, I mean, he's like 6'6". He's a monster. But he's not like, he didn't have a rookie season. Like, is he going to be Khalil Mack or Von Miller or Aaron Donald? You know, it doesn't quite look like that. And when you trade up a first-round pick, you're basically a player away. Well, now it's going to hurt them this year because they're always kind of tight with the cap because they have a lot of highly paid players. They only have two players on offense, Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. So I think it's a long way of saying, I think Sean Payton's really good. I think he's a consistent top five coach in the league. I think it's just hard to win in the NFL. Like, he's had some powerhouse teams these last 2 years. He won. It's hard to lose at home. I'll say that. Like, last year, they lost to Minnesota, but that game was on the road. So, this year, losing at home, you're the one seed to Jared Goff. I didn't think. Now, part of it is, I mean, Drew Brees is 40 years old. And these last two games, he looked 40 years old. Now, again, I think they don't have great offensive weapons. They have one elite receiver and one elite running back that's basically like a pseudo-slot receiver, too. Like Alvin Kamara is kind of a Darren Sproles in his prime on steroids meets like Christian McCaffrey. You know what I mean? He's sweet. But you're better off having a little balance, and that really kind of hurt him in that game. So, I think he's properly rated. I think there's one all-time great coach in the league who's arguably the best coach ever in Belichick. He's in his own little category. And then there's, a group of four or five guys that are just awesome, you know, that are just consistently really good. They're flawed, you know, just like most players are flawed. Even great players have flaws. Like Kevin Durant, you know, he turns the ball over, you know. Like Sean Payton, he's got some flaws. Andy Reid has some flaws. Pete Carroll has some flaws. They're better. They run circles around most of the league. I mean, they really do. Now, I know Andy hasn't won a Super Bowl, but I think we'd all agree he's one of the best coaches in the league. You just don't win it every year, unless you're Belichick, you know? I'd throw Doug Peterson in there. He's pretty damn good, too. There's just a lot of good coaches in the league right now. McVay, Nagy, a lot of young blood. Still, like, I make fun of Zimmer being a meathead, but Zimmer's still a really good defensive coach. John, big fan of the podcast. What is your opinion on the Nebraska Cornhuskers' future under Scott Frost? Will Frost forecast hype? Will the hype come true, or are we going to see them continue to be average? I'm a big Adrian Martinez guy. Their quarterback, their true freshman quarterback, who from Fresno, had some moments last year, got banged up. I talked to a buddy that worked with Scott Frost. Think he's big time. I believe in Scott Frost. I just think the quarterback's pretty special, and if they can keep him healthy, their coaching staff has proven. You know, I was going to say USF, but it's UCF. I mean, they can win. They know how to coach. You just need more talent in that conference. The conference is good, right? Wisconsin, Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State. I mean, that's four. And Michigan State's pretty damn good. I mean, the conference is damn good. And it's physical, but I think they got a quarterback with, Dwayne Haskins is coming out. So, I mean, they might. I'd take Adrian Martinez over the kid from Michigan. I'm trying to, his name escapes me. Shea Patterson. I'll tell you that much. I like Nebraska. Now, it's just hard. You know, there's a reason usually coaching staffs turn over. It's probably a little more difficult than you think to bounce back. But as he showed at UCF, he'll bounce back fast. Now, it might be 8-4,
Might not be like 11-1, but I think in maybe by Adrian's junior year, so a year from like not this fall, but the following fall, they could be a legit team. Anyways, was wondering your thoughts, another question, on the Seahawks, especially now that they're in the NFC West is loaded with these offensive coaches, McVay, Clay, Kliff, and how you think that Pete and Russ are going to match up. Well, I know this right now. The Rams are the cream of the crop. Seattle's played them really well, actually, the last 2 years. They had a game, I think it was 2 years ago in L.A., they went toe-to-toe with them. They played them really well both times this year. Easily could have won both the games. So as long as you have Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, like, you're going to be good. Seattle, to me, is going to be better next year than they were this year. Think how many young players they have. You know, Rashad Penny's going to be a year older. He should take a step. I mean, they did draft him in the first round. They have a much higher first-round pick this year because, you know, they got knocked out in the first round. So when are they ever drafting in the, you know, like high 20s? Or they might even be like 19 or 20. I think they're 21. But, yeah, I love them, you know. I think that I'm bullish on Kyle and the Niners if Jimmy's healthy. But I can't just chalk them up that they can beat Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. Like, I've seen some of the best teams. Like, listen, I know they didn't win the Super Bowl, but I've been watching the 49ers since probably, like, that I can remember, like, 91. So I've seen some pretty good teams, 92, 93. That 94 Niners team is one of the best teams ever. Like, the Harbaugh Niners in their peak were unreal. Never won a championship, no rings, but that team could hang with anyone, any era. You know, I know what I saw, and Pete Carroll could give them a game. Yeah, Pete Carroll can coach. Like, you can put him in a parking lot against whoever, and his team's going to hang. So, I'm always bullish on Seattle as long as they have Russ and Pete. I think it's up to the Rams have proven they can beat them, but the Niners and Cardinals, clearly Kyle hasn't, and Kliff Kingsbury, I mean, shit, he's never coached a day in, you know, an NFL game in his life. So I think he's going to be okay, actually, but I can't just say, like, I would expect him, just knowing what I know now, to lose both games to Seattle. I think it's going to be hard for Kliff Kingsbury to win divisional games this year. I'm seriously considering going into sports analysis and wanted to know a recommendation for a great school. My first couple choices are Full Sail and Hofstra. Any advice? Well, I went to Cal Poly and was an ag business major and basically transferred into just a normal business major. I think the key is now with all the avenues from YouTube to Twitter to just everything on the internet, it doesn't really matter what you major in. You know, I know there are some broadcasting schools, Syracuse, Missouri, you name it. There are some big ones. I think you can go wherever. Cream rises. Just work on your craft. That's what I'd recommend. Just if you want to get into broadcasting, whether it's play-by-play, whether it's opinions, whatever you want to get into, just get behind a mic. Start recording. That's a great thing. iPads. I mean, I do a daily Periscope show on my iPad and make money off it. So, I mean, you can do that. You can do it on your phone. You know, technology is your friend. You don't need to be, you know, I'm lucky that Colin reached out, but now I wouldn't have the reach, clearly, but I mean, I just started a pod. I'd been doing a podcast for a while before I started doing this one. So you can just do the, I mean, I just have an Apple computer right now talking into a MacBook Pro. It's a great part about technology. It's really kind of there for you to do what you don't really need other people. Now, you eventually do to make money, and I get all that. I'm not just trying to sell you on a dream here, but you can start now with kind of bare minimal essentials that you probably already have. So, yeah, good luck. Just, you know, you don't need to go to the best school. I mean, says the guy that couldn't get into any of the schools. One more question. I know you've talked about how baseball is dying and only old people watch it. What do you think about Major League Baseball expanding and creating new buzz to younger generation? There's been rumors that the A's relocating in Portland being a viable option and financial support from Russell Wilson and Ciara. Do you think that would reinvigorate the casual baseball fan? Maybe in Portland. I just think that the NFL, and I say it all the time, like, listen, I watch NBA games every day. You know, I watch over 160 baseball games. Like, I'm kind of a sports loser, but I know most people don't. I think a huge element is just gambling and fantasy football.
I do think that the A's could eventually move to Portland. I also think that Seattle is going to get a basketball team. Having scouted a little bit in that area, the University of Washington, Portland State, Oregon, I mean, it's just, it really is one. I went, my little brother got married. We took his bachelor party at Bandon Dunes. It is one of, like, Oregon and just the state of Washington is probably one of the more underappreciated just areas in all of America. No one really talks about it, but anyone that knows, knows. Like, if you're a golfer and you want to play Bandon Dunes, it's pretty incredible. I mean, I shot, and I'm a decent golfer, I shot 100 and had the time of my life. I mean, it's awesome. It's really cool. Went up there for a couple days, partied, played golf. And obviously, yeah, I've actually never been to a Seattle Seahawks game in Seattle, but I went to a University of Washington game when they were playing there. Yeah, I mean, I think baseball would work. You'd have to go a dome because it rained so much. I think that's why my favorite baseball team ever growing up, even as a Giants fan, was that, you know, 95 Seattle team with Griffey and A-Rod and the big unit, Jay Buhner. I batted like Jay Buhner in Little League for like 5 straight years. I couldn't hit shit, but I had that open stance, and now I'm bald, so it kind of works. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's just hard. It's just a lot of inventory, and people aren't as interested. But I appreciate everyone. Keep hitting me up, Instagram, at John Middlecoff, and you know, I'll talk to you guys. Have a good weekend. I'll talk to you on Tuesday, and we'll start getting ready for the Super Bowl. John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast, out.